Stein Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea, and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. February 19th, 2025. It is 3 p.m. North American Eastern Time, 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, where the BBC is reporting that, quote, anti-Muslim hate, unquote, in the UK is at record levels, 9 p.m. in Rome, where the Italian Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, has visited Pope Francis in hospital and says he's making jokes. Nobody ever said that when they visited Ayatollah Khomeini in hospital. 10 p.m. in Kyiv! I think that's item one on the peace negotiations. Can we get it back down to fewer syllables again? 10 p.m. in Kyiv, where Zelensky says Trump is living in a, quote, Russian disinformation space, to which Trump has responded that Zelensky is a dictator. 11 p.m. on the Gaza Riviera, 11:30 p.m. in Tehran for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone, 1:45 in Kathmandu for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone, 4 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers, I'm sorry about that, 7 a.m. on the northwest coast of Tasmania, where close to 100 whales, just shy of 100, are to be euthanized after stranding themselves on a beach near the township of Arthur River. 9 a.m. in Auckland, and an even more convivial hour for the Kippers and Kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. 80 years ago today, February 19th, 1945, 30,000 U.S. Marines landed on the island of Iwo Jima. Thank you to all those listeners to Tales for Our Time who wrote to say how much they appreciated, of all things, speaking of those poor whales, the euthanasia scene in our current tale, Robert Hugh Benson's novel, Lord of the World. It was one, every so often, the torture scene in George Orwell's 1984 and the sort of hallucinatory scene in our Christmas detective thriller a couple of months ago. There's a scene that does call for me to stretch my acting skills rather beyond their natural limits, but I was touched by those of you who said how much you appreciated it. The next episode of Lord of the World, where rocketing towards our grand conclusion. The next episode will be tonight. Sort of generally, I think it's around 7 o'clock Eastern time, around midnight Greenwich Mean Time. I'm a bit distracted, to be honest, because I just saw this headline sort of 90 seconds before the show started. I think it was a link on a website somewhere. It said Sassoon and the Allies Trump Needs. And I used to love Siegfried Sassoon's wartime poetry from the Great War when I was a kid at school. And so I thought, yeah, I can see the connect. I can see where they're going with this. And because they used the word allies, I assumed it was Ukraine. And so I clicked over, and it's a story. It's one of these stories that are starting to emerge now that about Trump's so-called missteps. I'm not there yet. It may take me another month or three, but I'm still loving practically everything that emerges each day from the White House. But these guys weren't. So they were complaining that it wasn't Siegfried Sassoon. It was somebody called Danielle Sassoon, who's a prosecutor in the Southern District of New York, and decided to hand in her resignation. And these people are saying, oh, this is a disaster. This is a disaster for the Trump administration. This Danielle Sassoon is just who the Trump administration... I've no idea who she is, if you have, you're ahead of me. But I was sorry. Anyway, when I was a teenager, I loved Siegfried Sassoon's poetry. And I had assumed somebody was going to connect it up to the Great War. Not to the Great War, to the Ukraine War. Good morning. I'm doing this from memory, so forgive me if I get a word or two wrong. Good morning, the general said when we met him last week on our way to the line. Now the soldiers he smiled at are most of them dead, and we're cursing his staff, the incompetent swine. He's a cheery old card, grunted Harry to Jack as they slogged up to Arras with rifle and pack. But he did for them both by his plan of attack. That's a great poem. And you just have to make a few substitutions. You could put Thoroughly Modern Millie, the highly decorated 27-star general. You could put Lindsey Graham. You could put Bill Kristol and his quote-unquote charity. That he's getting money from USAID from. You can put Boris Johnson on there. You can put Emmanuel Macron on there. You can put all kinds. Yeah, the soldiers they smiled at are most of them dead. They did for them, but they didn't even have a plan of attack. I can't get over. I mean, at a certain level, if you step back, this is another reminder that the Pentagon just shouldn't be involved in any war. I mean, I suppose they've demonstrated their versatility. You know, in Kabul, they demonstrated, yeah, we can lose 20-year wars where we've completely wasted the life of our own soldiers. But on the other hand, we took a 20-minute tea break and launched the Ukraine war, and we've now demonstrated that we can, for completely pointless reasons, we can waste the lives of other countries' soldiers, as they've done with Ukraine, which will take to Democrat. The interesting thing about the Ukraine-Russia war is it's the first war that's been fought between two demographically weakened powers. You know, they've both got deathbed demography, but Ukraine's is worse, and it's starting from not as numerous a height. They're also the two largest countries in Europe. This is why I don't want to do a Margaret Brennan show, the Brain Dead Brennan hour, because I can't stand the know-nothing rubbish that passes for news. But just basic facts about Ukraine. As I said, it's the first war fought between two countries with serious deathbed demography. They happen to be the two countries, the two largest countries in Europe. They also happen to be the two most corrupt countries in Europe. These are like basics. So if you're going to fight a proxy war there, These are basics that you should be taking into account. Anyway, we're not going to do all Ukraine today, but do we have any breaking news? Oh, this, I don't know how breaking this is, but it broke me up. A transgender aide to Justin Trudeau, Nathaniel Morin, has defended her participation in an all-female race in Ottawa, where Mademoiselle Morin, who was Monsieur Morin until 20 minutes ago, Mademoiselle Morin managed to beat a 12-year-old girl into second place. Well, that is just showing you Yanks how wrong you all are on this annexing Canada business. Say what you like about the government of Canada, but they can beat a 12-year-old girl. Should we get to your questions? Yeah, okay. Let's get to your questions. I forgot how professional. I listened to some old Rush shows before the anniversary earlier this week, and I'd forgotten how good he was at the broadcasting, which I never quite mastered. There were always people, you know, I'll let you in on a little trade secret about Rush Limbaugh guest hosts. Sometimes they try ones who worked at Rush affiliates in Des Moines or Dubuque or whatever, and they were a bit too slick and professional because they did the morning show, so they always go, hey, 3:47, let's check traffic with, or whatever. And then they had guys like me who just like came down from the hills once every month and had no idea about any of that stuff. And on the whole, the listeners didn't like it if you were too good. It was a very weird thing. The listeners didn't really like it if you were too good at radio, which was never a problem with me. Robert Bridges says, so far the media has not drawn parallels between the present talks between Russia and the US about ending the Biden-Newland-Johnson-fueled Ukraine war and Hitler's negotiations over the Sudetenland. Do you know the Sudetenland? I think Braindead Brennan calls it the Sudafed land, because it was the Sudafed Germans all had terribly contagious flu that had come from a sausage market in Bavaria. You probably heard about it. Anyway, they had a big war over free speech about it. Robert Bridges goes on, how do you see the war now when compared to your trip into Ukraine? Gosh, so long ago, it seems. Well, it was 3 years ago. Robert adds, an interesting set of parallels exists between the present conflict and the Crimean War, where England and France pushed Turkey into being the flunky for starting the war. We don't want to fight, but by jingo, I'm just doing this, just memories of childhood now. We don't want to fight, but by jingo, if we do, we've got the men, we've got the ships, we've got the money too. We've fought the bear before, and while we're Britain's true, the Russians shall not have Constantinople. Okay, what am I doing? I just can't. Jingles from childhood. I got to do more than that. The Ukraine. Look, I can't. The Ukraine war is over and Russia won. That's the reality. People who don't accept that reality are just, wanting to fight to the last Ukrainian. That's very butch of you. You know, what was it John Kerry says? How do you ask the last man to die for Lindsey Graham? It's another American fiasco. As I said, it's a question of, oh, yeah, we can lose wars with our own men and we can lose wars with other people's men. The Pentagon should be nowhere near any war. You've lost. It's a fiasco. And for the poor Ukrainians, as for a lot of people, from the South Vietnamese to the Afghans, one is reminded of Bernard Lewis's devastating line that America is harmless as an enemy and treacherous as a friend. And because of that line, that's why highly decorated 27-star General Thoroughly Modern Millie and all the other highly decorated 27-star generals should all be out of that bloody building and relocated to some Veterans Benefits Administration Center in a strip mall in Cleveland. So the war is over. I mean, it's not technically over, because if Ukraine wants to go on fighting it without being bankrolled by American sugar daddies. By the way, they weren't just sending the checks. We were told these last 3 years that American advisors... Does that sound familiar, that phrase, American advisors? Yeah, rings a vague bell. American advisors were on the ground in Ukraine, making all the important decisions. Well, that didn't work out too well. And if they want to keep it going, and the Europeans, for example, who are, you know, Macron held his emergency summit after J.D. Vance's speech. And if they want to keep it going, and they want to become the sugar daddies, they can pick up the American slack, they're welcome to try that. But I wouldn't recommend it, because it is going to take... Ukraine is so demographically... devastated after all the guys just thrown into the meat grinder of that war, because this is old school war. You know, this isn't one of those, oh, shock and awe, baby type. This is old school, you know, bloody, just taking one town, being forced back a bit, taking another. This is old school war. And the Russians, whether... The Ukrainians, what happens if it goes on for another 3 years? No one can say, but we can say the Ukrainians are not going to win it and the Russians are not going to lose it. So this might be the time to have some serious peace talks. And by serious peace talks, I don't mean people like Sir Keir Starmer offering to put boots on the ground. The ceasefire line. If they were to have the ceasefire line where the forces are right now, and I love all the way all these people, wait a minute, you're not going to let Vladimir Putin hold all the land he's taken, are you? Well, tell me why. You know, I'm not into Putin. I don't particularly want to have a poison dart or whatever aimed at me while I'm strolling down the Strand in London, never mind going for a health checkup and falling out of a seventh floor window. He's not my kind of guy. But the thing about diplomacy, if you want to conduct effective peace negotiations, you have to look at, you have to be able to understand. I mean, just to go back to, you know, all the Hitler stuff, Churchill actually had a very good psychological understanding of Hitler. Hitler had no idea about Churchill. That's one of the interesting factoids about the two sides in that war. Now, in this case, you have to be able to look at it from Putin's point. Oh, why does he want to keep all the land he's taken? Well, maybe it's because Lindsey Graham was running around, who's won one of these stupid medals from Ukraine. He's, you know, he's got the King of the Lion Award or whatever it's called, some stupid ludicrous award medal from Ukraine. It's because Lindsey Graham was going around saying, oh, we have to regime change the Kremlin, right? So you've just told him that for 3 years. Biden called for regime change in the Kremlin. You've assassinated people on the high up people on the streets of Moscow, which I don't believe Ukraine would have been able to do without direct American assistance. You've blown up pipelines in the Baltic so he can't ship his oil to Europe. So now, just looking at it from the other side's point of view, he's taken all this land. There aren't many more Ukrainian infantrymen left to kill or maim. So look at it from his point of view. Why suddenly he's supposed to be magnanimous in victory after pipsqueaks like Lindsey Graham, oh, we've got to regime change this guy. He's a bad dude. We got to blow up his pipeline. You know, what is this? Get real. Get real. As I said, the interesting thing about Ukraine is it's like Ireland and England. You know, Ukraine, I made this point with Jonathan Riley, who didn't quite understand it, and having served in Ireland on GB News, Lieutenant General Riley, he sort of took it the wrong way and thought, but I was just making it in terms of the population. In Ireland, there are people who just want to be Irish, and in Ireland, there are people who want to be Irish and British. And in Ukraine, there are people who just want to be Ukrainian, and there are others who want to be Ukrainian and Russian. And in Ireland, as in Ukraine, where you draw the line can get a bit complicated. But that's the basic reality. Now, you've got, it's as I said, Ukraine is the largest country in Europe except Russia. And the ceasefire line, if they stop tonight, would be over 800 miles. So the first thing to ask when Keir Starmer says, oh, don't worry, we're going to have put boots on the ground there. Oh, yeah, how many boots have you got, you stupid prat? This is, for a start, if you say NATO's going to guarantee the peace, why would Putin want to accept that? Putin doesn't want, the whole bloody stupid war got going because he doesn't want NATO in you. He doesn't want Ukraine in NATO, and he doesn't want NATO in Ukraine. And now you're opening gambit, these idiots. Is, oh yeah, we're gonna have NATO police the ceasefire line, really? Well, here's the problem with that: Putin and the especially the Russian soldiers who are looking at this stuff coming down, or they're in some bloody stupid field in the Donbass, and oh look, there's this missile heading straight to for us. What does it say on it? Oh yeah, made in America. Oh yeah, made in the United Kingdom. Oh yeah, made in France. So they think NATO's on the other side. So whether they would accept a NATO peacekeeping mission, you would need to have, I think, at least 200,000, 800-mile-long perimeter. I think General Riley said you'd need 200,000 men for that, because it'd be very itchy. It's not like when you're in the middle of Africa and you've got some, you know, Swedish peacekeepers. It's not like that at all. It's going to be a very tense and potentially trigger-happy ceasefire. So you'd need like 200,000 men. You can't do it on the sort of UN peacekeeping thing where you just have a few hundred, because you're looking at the Srebrenica. How many Balkan Yugoslav breakup Bosnian war fans out there? You remember the Srebrenica massacre? That's what happens if you say, oh, we just need 300 blue helmets or whatever. Nobody's got numbers like that. The United States has said it's not going to put boots on the ground. It's not going to be part of this. The only other NATO member that has the necessary manpower, would be Turkey. And I don't know how ready Ukraine is to have its peace policed by pro-Russian Turkish Muslims. So that's all going to be, but basically, if General Riley's figure of 200,000 is about what you'd need, that's twice the strength of the French army. About let me work this out. That's like four times the size of the German army. Where are where Tell me, how many... So if it's like the Afghan thing, where we stand shoulder to shoulder with America, we're sending 27 troops to join the coalition of the willing in Afghanistan. You know, the Germans joined the coalition in Afghanistan only on condition that they could be in a province where no fighting was taking place. So they weren't even, you know, and they wouldn't participate. So, but it's not even, oh, the Germans, they're manning the photocopier back at barracks. No, 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 no. They're not manning the photocopier at the barracks in this province. They're manning the photocopier at the barracks in the next province where nothing is happening. And so tell me how many members NATO has. If they all want to chip in, oh yeah, we'll send 157. How many does of all 200 nations in the world in NATO? That's apparently what Lindsey Graham wants. This has been a disaster. You know, Pete. I worked with Pete Hegseth for years on air, and he's a very smart guy. And he understands, and people are mad at him because he was ruling out NATO membership for Ukraine and things. He knows how crap the Pentagon is. And we all get it as well. I mean, psychologically, everyone's moved on from Ukraine and they're all like panting for war with Iran or whoever they're maneuvering into the... It doesn't matter. They can't win against anybody until you close that place down, fire all the highly decorated 27-star generals, and rebuild that force so that it's not a racket. As I said, everything is very basic, as we've learned from Elon Musk just in the first month of this administration. Everything the government of the United States touches is a racket, which is why everybody is living large in half a dozen counties in Virginia and Maryland, and in the worst example of where this, there's nothing to show for any of it. There's nothing to show for any of it. There's not a since this became a way of life for Bill Kristol and people, there isn't a single bloody, you can't point, you're not even like these rinky-dink countries like Denmark to Sweden with the Øresund bridge between, so you can get from, if you're on the Swedish side, you can get to an international airport in another country in 20 minutes. You can't get from Midtown Manhattan to LaGuardia in that. There's nothing to show for any of it, except you've enriched some of the worst bloody people on the planet. You know, I assumed when Bill Kristol suddenly, I took that Never Trump magazine that National Review did. I assumed it was done in good faith. Then you realize, no, it's not. It's just these people are all in this tight, close little world where nobody's actually contributing to primary wealth creation in any way, but they're all getting, you know, the idea that Bill Kristol is living off grants from the United States Agency for International Development, and he has, I mean, why doesn't, if he's that interested in international development, why doesn't he go to Ukraine and develop them some new cemeteries? Because they could use that right now. This whole business with, and Trump gets that at a certain basic level. And he wants out because it isn't going anywhere. You know, Putin is a fact of life. And you can make all these, cracks about him. But unless you're... Can you seriously imagine if NATO got into a nuclear exchange with Russia? I mean, why don't you just make a list of the countries on the planet that you think NATO could beat? Because I don't see it right now. The Pentagon is a disgrace, and a misfired drone or a North Korean nuke ought to take out the Pentagon, because they should tear it down and salt the earth. The notorious Mr. J says, sorry, I got a bit carried away there, went a bit long, as Rush liked to say. There are all these rumors that Trump and Putin are ready to rip the Ukraine into two bite-sized chunks for each to dominate for their yummy mineral resources. No. If you split Ukraine, if you partition Ukraine, each Ukraine will, in European terms, be huge. For each to dominate for their yummy mineral resources. Damn the Ukrainian government and people, of course. Is there any base for concern in such rumours? Well, in Iraq... in 2003, it was standard for everyone to say, no blood for oil. Well, America didn't get any oil. The French got some oil, whatever it was then called, Total Fina Elf, I think it was then. They had a lot of oil deals in Iraq. In Afghanistan, which has a lot of... I mean, people think Afghanistan is just a great source of rubble, but in fact, they've got... the stuff you need for the electric car batteries and things like that. The Chinese are now all over. The Chinese don't do the shock and awe. You just notice that 48 hours after you've left, the best restaurant in Kabul is full of Chinamen and you can't get a table. Funny how that works. So after 30 years of being accused for being all about blood for resources... Trump isn't wrong to say, well, actually, I was listening to these left-wing guys jumping up and down in the street saying, no blood for oil. Well, we're not going to put any of our blood in there, but what's the deal with the oil? You know, he's not wrong to say after 30 years of this talk, he might as well try to. The thing about this is Ukraine is corrupt. I like them. I like the Ukrainian people. But you know you're not in... you don't need a frontier between Hungary and Ukraine. By the way, I'm thinking of going back to Ukraine. Because I've been thinking about it just today. And I remember there was something it was difficult with GB News, as you can imagine. And I was thinking there was one thing I never got to when I was there. So I'm thinking of... maybe going back and trying to reach it this time there. But most of you have heard the story of how I got into Ukraine, wound up having to walk there. You don't actually need a border post because you can tell where Hungary ends and where Ukraine begins because the road falls to pieces. It's not because everything's pretty reasonably priced in Ukraine, but they have a cruder version of the problem that the United States has with the racket in the DC metropolitan area, is that some money for this little town in Subcarpathia or whatever it's called. And by the time it gets there, so much has been skimmed off. The road is just pothole. I'm glad my rental car died at the frontier, because I can say, even without a war, I'm not sure if you were Hertz Rent-A-Car in Budapest, you'd want those cars being driven on Ukrainian roads. So the reality is that what happened, you're talking, Mr. J, about a sovereign Ukraine. Ukraine became sovereign nominally in the early 90s. And the minute it did, then the usual kind of geopolitically ambitious Yanks began interfering with it. So essentially the project that Zelensky proposed was to transfer Ukraine from a Russian client state to an American, or American EU client state. So we're not talking about an independent, sovereign Ukraine standing on its own two feet. That doesn't seem to be on the table. If you're as broke as America and you blew all this money because you listened, Lindsey Graham says, keep shoveling billions at Ukraine, and you've accomplished nothing. I understand Lindsey Graham can't see what the big deal is, because you accomplish nothing when you blow billions in the District of Columbia. So why should you expect to accomplish any more when you blow billions on Kharkiv or Odessa or whatever? Ukraine is in a tough situation, and I'm not sure the best solution isn't to, in that part of the world, the states are all on wheels and entire ethnic communities come and go. And I'm not sure that the present reality, where an awful lot of Ukrainian land is controlled by the Russians right now, isn't actually, as I said, my comparison is with Ireland. Ukraine's is not an homogenous population. I say I like them. I don't like corruption. I can't stand that. But the women are pretty hot. And I like the way it's not just some multicultural hodgepodge, as I've said before. Everyone I met in Ukraine was Ukrainian, except for one hottie I found myself talking to at the bar one night, who turned out to be a Moldovan hottie. Fine-looking women, the Moldovans, although I think there's some plans for a greater Romania incorporating Moldova, so we're not finished redrawing the map yet. Joel D. in Sacramento says, ahoy, matey. Hope this message finds you as well as can be. In what universe did Emmanuel Macron and Keir Starmer think modern-day Germany, racked with guilt for an eternity, would seem, will deploy troops to face off against the Russians in Ukraine? The same country that is, at a very deep fundamental level, afraid of any memory or comparison to the Nazi era, is supposed to do the very thing that would most remind the world of that memory. Are Macron and Starmer really that dense? Or are they just playing with the minds of the generals? Well, I think they've redesigned the uniform a bit since then, so I'm not sure it would be as reminiscent of the good old days as you seem to think, Joel. But as I said, the problem is more basic. You would not be able. They basically, and here's the other thing too. Of course, I'm just sort of running the numbers for day one, but you'd probably have to have them there for 2 or 3 years at least, and they simply don't have the numbers. The only NATO army with the manpower, which is what you need, because you got to have a thing. You can't just have, Russians on one side and Ukrainians on another, and a few dozen nice UN blue helmet types from Bangladesh or wherever. You've actually got to have the numbers so that if something does get going, the fact is, Trump seems completely wedded to that there should not be American boots on the ground, but you can move the completely pointless US Army currently living in Germany, not terribly far, to Ukraine, and they would have the numbers. But even if you took the entire German army, you'd still be about 150. I don't know where these things are coming. This is the difference when you're just used to sort of participation ribbons for war. So you think, oh yes, I'm going to send 20 people to Iraq, and that way I'll be part of the coalition of the willing. It's not how it works, this. And I don't know that the thing about this is, J.D. Vance made a brilliant comparison. Well, not really a comparison, but he just said if America and Europe no longer share any values, why the hell are we? I wrote in America Alone that the only reason why they can afford socialized healthcare and lavish welfare systems in continental Europe is because American taxpayers pay for them indirectly by the number of American forces you have in the United States. Oh, that's great. Now we can have socialized healthcare because we don't have to have an army. So you have the absurd situation where some of the wealthiest countries on the planet, the wealthiest countries in human history, Norway,